Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of the Personal Wealth Coach starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And I always feel at the end of that
night charging
introduction, like, no, like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do next.
Oh, yeah, what next? Well, you just scream and run at a wall. That's what we're supposed to do.
Oh, okay. Well, it's got a hole in it, so it's a holy wall.
Yes.
Well, there is sort of a consensus out there, and it's pretty rare that you get a consensus among major money managers, the MMM. The highest consensus since Barron has been tracking major money managers.
Mm-hmm.
And they are like 80% of major money managers, I think it is, I don't remember the exact number, conclude that the markets will go through a short period of correction, and it won't be a particularly severe correction, which is what we're seeing right now, but that the economy and the stock market will do exceptionally well over the next couple of years. That's pretty amazing. 74% of money managers identify themselves as bullish or very bullish about the prospect for U.S. stocks, an all-time high in the 20 years since they've been measuring this. Interestingly enough, at major market turns, such as we saw in 2007 and in 2000, the number of bullish money managers is generally fairly low. And so the professionals actually do seem to have some kind of an idea about, it's not perfect, because actually there was only a minority in both cases who said the bottom is going to fall out, and it's the same minority that say the bottom is going to fall out no matter what they ask them or when.
Yeah. Of course they think that.
They're called perma-bears. And there's another strong indication, by the way, of two things out there. One is that interest rates will eventually rise and the economy is going to recover. And the other one, of course, is that gold is probably going to fall a lot more. I've got a very, very strong indicator that I watch very carefully, and that is that Bill Gross, the manager of
PIMCO.
At PIMCO, is decided to go out and buy TIPS, Treasury Inflation Protected Securities, a large quantity of them recently, and he tweeted that to everybody. And he's also
amazing,
recommending buying gold. Now, for those of you who don't know,
which is most of us,
Bill Gross is the guy that at the bottom of the market in 2000 predicted the market would fall a heck of a lot further.
Yes,
I think he did again in 2009.
I think he said Dow 5,000.
Yes, in both cases he's trying to prove that, and he is a person who is firmly of the opinion that the United States economy is going to tank always.
Always, which is good. And this is something that most people think about us, and they think we're optimistic all the time. We like to, in many cases, we're not using Bill Gross's portfolio, but in many cases, we like to have somebody involved in the portfolio that absolutely disagrees with our optimistic view or our pessimistic view or whatever the view is. We want to have somebody out there that is completely disagreeing with us for whatever good reasons that they have.
But
in the case of Bill Gross, we can look at it and say he's...
But he's a really, really...
He's right when it's down, but he's wrong when it's up.
Well, when the market's up, he generally is not predicting market crashes. It's only when the market hits bottom...
That he says it's over, that the world is going to end
very soon.
So
he tends to be a very, very, very strong indicator. Incidentally, Treasury Inflation Protected Securities actually dropped... which I thought was not possible for them to do.
Well, the reason why it dropped is because we had a little bit more deflation.
And that's another thing that the Financial Times of London, The Economist, Wall Street Journal, Barron's, an amazing number of articles are out there noting something, not predicting something,
but noting,
noting that the underlying inflation report that we just got indicated there isn't any.
Yeah. And when you take the specific large purchase items that govern things that are like tips, you realize that we've moved backwards, which is deflation. And you'll recognize that tips, the Treasury Inflation Protected Security, is not a T-dips. It's not Treasury deflation and Inflation Protected Security. It means that if we have deflation, you're going to have less money.
And the number they're looking at, by the way, is not the short-term number that makes some small degree of headlines for those of us who are geeky enough to read it.
CPI quarterly report.
It actually comes out every month. But on April 16th, of course, not very many people were looking on April 16th at what we were looking at. But on April 16th, the Labor Department gave their reading on inflation for 1 year. Well, actually, they give it month at a time. But for the year ending in March, the consumer price index was up 1.5%.
1.5.
Now, again, I want to point something out here. Most important thing I can tell you about what I just said and about what the Labor Department reported. I want you, if anyone's actually listening, I'll try to present.
I'm not.
Someone is. I want you to think back to Glenn Beck and other talk show hosts who have dabbled into economics.
Also dabbled into the sale of gold.
Right, and into the sale of
investors.
Gold and all kinds of things. But the economic side of it, they were saying and have been saying for 4 years that massive inflation is about to occur. Massive runaway inflation is about to occur.
And there's a lot of people that believe them,
and they were
wholeheartedly believe them.
This last week, there were people, a couple of hedge fund managers were quoted extensively in the Wall Street Journal in videos. They were interviewed, and they were referred to, John Paulson, among others, as being great, wise money managers with great authority and great experience.
Is this John Paulson? And it's not Hank Paulson?
No, this is John Paulson, hedge fund manager.
Oh, not Hank Paulson, former Treasury Secretary.
No, this is John Paulson, the hedge fund manager that knowingly put together a deal sold through Goldman Sachs to a bunch of pension funds
that he knew was going to blow up. But
and
he made a lot of money on it.
Well, he shorted his – first he got paid to put it together.
A lot of money to
And
get,
then
put
he
it together.
Promptly went into the market and shorted it, which means he
sold it when he didn't
bet,
own it.
He bet that it would go down, and he made money on both sides of it. And his defense before Congress was very, very simple. It was perfectly legal.
It was absolutely legal, you unethical – person.
But this is where he is kind of caught up short on the deal, is that he had taken John Paulson took a huge position in gold, and its falling has caused him some small degree of grief, that and the fact that there was like $16 billion of withdrawals from his hedge fund. The point is that these people who are still yelling, and he literally was yelling, some of the people, certainly Glenn Beck was yelling, that inflation is about to overwhelm us. So far, when I'm able to dig down, inevitably they have a serious financial interest in your believing that they don't disclose, because it's a nice thing about, from their perspective, about gold. They don't have to disclose that they hold gold or they're selling or they're doing something with gold, whereas in securities they do. But the point is that these people who scared, perhaps you, listener, or certainly many of the people we have as clients, scared them and took a lot of our time and in some cases frightened people into getting out of the market at the bottom, because they said that massive inflation was going to occur and all kinds of bad things were going to happen because of what the Federal Reserve was doing. I want you to look and note that over the last year, consumer price index rose 1.5%. And by the way, that includes fuel, that includes food.
The volatile items.
That's the whole enchilada. That's the nice thing about a year.
If you take food and energy out, utility gas was up 1.8%.
For the year or
all
for one
items,
month?
That was for the year.
Okay.
Yeah, we're talking about Where a lot of it came in was new vehicle price went up.
Okay.
That's where a major section of that 1.5% growth or in the inflation rate came from is because of new vehicle prices. Do you have any idea why that might be?
Why would new vehicle prices?
Part of the same reason that gas prices are down is that new emissions and gas mileage standards from the government have been going into place and making vehicles more expensive.
One of the Federal Reserve, and I can look it up if somebody wants to have the precise person involved. Actually, it's I got it here. It's Narayana Kokarlakota. I probably mispronounced that, but she is the president of the Minneapolis
Fed. It's very likely. I don't know what it was, but I'm fairly sure we mispronounced
Narayana Kokarlakota is what it looks like it says. Well, it's a he. I'm sorry. Got that one messed up.
You mispronounced even the gender.
Right. This... Pretty fascinating.
There should
anyway,
be some kind of guidance for that.
There should be. But several of the Federal Reserve chairpersons and economists outside of the United States made some interesting comments about the same subject, which is that Americans, both corporate and individually, are still sitting on record quantities of cash, and surveys indicate have deferred major capital purchases. They intend to make them. They just haven't made them yet, and they're going to. It's a matter of not if, but when. And which kind of brings me to something I wanted to talk about, if I could, for just a moment.
You wanted to talk about something? What is going on?
The essence
on
of
here?
Investing is figuring successful investing. Certainly you can do speculation, which some people call investing. But the essence of successful investing is figuring out where to position your money as investments where other people aren't necessarily putting their money, which means that you're buying into something that's down, you're buying into something that may continue to go down. And when there is a surge and people run off in a different direction, not following that surge and trying to be where they are and guessing where people are going to buy things in the short term, but holding to a steady, consistent course based on fundamental economics and value, which is, by the way, how Warren Buffett has done so well over the years. It is how every major investor or investment manager that I have ever read about or studied has done successfully over a long period of time. Unfortunately, the media focuses on the person who just hit the home run, not the person, to use the baseball analogy, who comes up to the bat and hits a single or a double almost every time they come up to bat. They somehow don't make history very well. And I like to remind people that Babe Ruth, who is still the most famous baseball player, does continue to hold one major league record, strikeouts. And that is something that when we talk about Babe Ruth and the fact that that Babe Ruth was such a great baseball player, it's very important to note he lost more games for whatever team he was on
than he won. Correct.
Because he struck out so often.
When he might hit a home run, but he might go to bat a whole bunch of times before he hit a home run.
And the point is that Babe Ruth's strength, and now we're over to economics, which is, well, you don't like organized sports, you know anything about it. What do you know about Babe Ruth? I was trying to figure out, why was Babe Ruth considered to be the ultimately most successful baseball player? And that's because, for the time, he drew bigger and more consistent crowds into the stadium, whether the New York Yankees or whoever had him won or lost, than any other player, because when he did hit a home run, man, did he hit a home run.
Yeah, and this is something a lot of people have talked to me lately about, the economics of baseball statistics, about the people from MIT and Harvard that went over to baseball and helped design baseball teams. And the team that started it, I'm not going to go into any names because this is not stuff that I know one of the economists that was involved, but I don't know any of the names of the sports teams or anything.
You know the significant, because you said stuff. That's the technical.
Stuff.
Stuff. The economic.
You can tell I know things because I said the word stuff.
Right.
All right. The economics of baseball don't have to do with winning and losing. If we applied economics, and we have, people have applied economics to the statistics of baseball to create winning teams that don't look like winning teams, and that does not fill the stands. The economics of baseball are not improved by economists doing statistics on how to win baseball games. Winning doesn't bring money into the team. Being flamboyant brings money into the team. Having brawls on the baseball diamond has the effect of filling the stands for the next year or so with hopes of people watching that it will happen again. Anyway, now I'm going to completely change the subject, if you don't mind.
Do I get whiplash at this point?
You might.
Okay.
This is good news, though. The Labor Department also comes out with a statistic that is not very widely followed by anyone. Except us. We occasionally follow it.
Is that kind of like, I don't eat there, it's so crowded that nobody ever goes there anymore?
That's right, yes. Okay. Based on the data that we have now for October of last year, which was the enrollment in college, 66.2% of high school graduates were enrolled in college or universities.
I actually was following that statistic. Yeah. So that means, you know what that means? We're both nobodies.
We're the only people that follow that, and since nobody follows that, we are nobody.
By definition.
By definition. This is a continuation, and when we look at things when people are concerned about minorities may not be having the same degree of enrollment. Some minorities, that's true, and others it's not. And something to be aware of, much more women, many, many more women were enrolled than men. 71.3% of young women and 61.3% of young men, recent graduates from high school, were enrolled in college. So that's
right.
10% more women than men in college, which those
did you follow the
I'm
rest
sure
of
makes
numbers?
The men very happy in college.
You got more numbers there?
I've got more. The minorities are the part that I find fascinating because this is not what's expected. One of them is very expected. There's these basically people in the acting world who get typecasted, and in this case, college enrollment rate of Asians is 82.2%. for recent high school graduates. So, okay, this is great. Recent white was 66.6%, which is very close to the overall average. 66.2 is the overall average. 66.6 is the average for white people. What do you think Hispanic enrollment is? Higher or lower?
Higher.
70.3% of recent high school graduates who consider themselves to be Hispanic are enrolled in college.
Yep. And they're going to do very well.
So this is stuff that
there's another statistic that goes with that.
Which one is that?
The wages.
Yeah.
The information about wages that came out. Did you see that?
Wages for college graduates?
No, about people in general. That wages are not keeping up with inflation.
Yep.
They're not keeping up with the economy. However, the average person with a college degree is earning almost three times as much money now as the average person without a college degree.
Right.
Actually, I shouldn't say average. It's the median, which is somewhat different from the average. In other
right.
words, the person half,
the right
half
in the, middle.
The people make more money, half the people make less money. The median college graduate is earning almost three times as the median non-college graduate, which should tell you where the Hispanics will probably be in a few years.
Yes, in a few years they are going to be doing very well. And I'm saying that because...
And they're all going to be totally ticked off at the Republican Party.
What I'm saying this for is because the future of America is very, very bright.
Mm-hmm.
The vast, not just the majority, but the vast majority of our high school graduates are going to college, and they're graduating from college.
And you're going to be on Lynn Willey's hit list in no time at all.
Yes. And what that amounts to is that we are getting smarter as a population, not necessarily intelligence-wise. We know more. We're learning more.
No, intelligence-wise, we're doing that, too.
Yes, that's true. But that has not as much to do with going to college as for some reason our kids are getting smarter. And when we test for it, it's been our IQ points have been going up, and that's not true for most of the world.
Well, let me tell you something else about the United States. Now, first off, all of you who are really, 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 really serious conservatives of the Tea Party nature, you're probably not going to like this. First off, it is a quote from the Financial Times of
London. Which is a British publication.
Secondly, the columnist over there is Lawrence Summers, who I'm going to be talking about, who was obviously is generally considered to be by many of the conservatives a liberal because he worked for Bill Clinton and
let's use his name as people would know him, Larry Summers.
Larry Summers, okay. He's writing in a British, what they call a magazine, we call a newspaper. I'm going to pull a little quote from him here. The U.S. moved faster to contain a systemic financial crisis than any country facing such an episode has done in history. Through all of the fractiousness, enough change has taken place without further policy actions. The ratio of debt to gross domestic product is expected to decline for the next 5 years. And he goes on to say, beyond that, the outlook depends largely on health care. But this is an interesting point. Health care costs, the growth of health care costs has slowed to the rate of GDP for 3 years in a row now. What happened 3 years ago?
Affordable Care Act.
Yeah. This is the first Obamacare. Such slowdown in half a century.
Well, there's a couple of points here, and this is in the CPI.
Let me go on. Within a decade, it is likely that the U.S. will no longer be a net importer of fossil fuels. Most schools and teachers are for the first time evaluated on objective metrics of performance. I won't go into all the other things he said, but what he was doing is comparing the rest of the world. He's writing in Europe now, okay?
Yeah.
In Britain, in Great Britain, in a British newspaper.
Nothing like rubbing their faces in it.
And he said gridlock in the article is about the fact that political gridlock in America is not a bad thing. It is a good thing. It is in the best traditions of America that once we have done something to deal with a crisis, we should then fight like cats and do nothing with a great deal of enthusiasm and vigor.
For those, I think most of the Tea Party would agree with that. If Congress is doing nothing, we're happy. I'm happy that way, and I'm not a Tea Partier. I'm the old school Tea Party. I don't think taxes should be very high, and I think people should know when they pay the taxes.
I think a lot of the Tea Party would like some major changes in government.
Uh-huh.
And they're not getting it.
Yeah, the change.
And a lot of the liberal Democrats would like some major changes in government.
And they're not getting it.
And they're not getting it either.
Which makes me happy.
Which makes a lot. But you see, it makes a lot of the both right and left wing very unhappy.
Correct.
But his point, and I happen to agree with it, is gridlock at this point is probably not a bad deal at all, including everything else that's going on.
Reuters did a poll on this is just to emphasize what you've just said. Reuters just did a poll, and the poll was about how people felt about gun control legislation failing in Congress, in the Senate. And 49% of people said it's what it should be. That's the way it's supposed to be. About 25% of people said they were outraged, and about 25% of people said they were ecstatic.
That makes about sense.
So there are people that are jumping around happy because nothing happened. There are people that are upset and angry because nothing happened. And then there's about half of the country, 50% of the people going, well, that's kind of what I expected. It was really dumb. There's only a small amount of people that really wanted that thing passed. Why?
Mm-hmm.
So all of that emotion, those of you that are on Facebook at all, the emotion that has been spewing back and forth between people that want their guns and people that don't want their guns, That's only 25% on both sides. The majority of people in America want the right to have guns, but they're not going to get really scared and emotional when a piece of legislation comes to the Senate because they think, well, they just won't get elected if they pass that.
Yeah, it's very much like major tax cuts, much ado about nothing.
Right.
Which will probably make a lot of people angry at me.
Well, we've already got a caller coming in, yeah. And we might be about to lose our heads here.
So the telephone number is calling here, 773-1400 or?
1-866-597-1400.
And we have a caller on 866-597-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. It's Chris in Georgetown. How are you?
Hello, Chris von
Hello,
Georgetown.
Hello, Chris.
Good dog. I don't disagree with you about the United States and our ability to do things. It's
good, because if you did, we would call you unpatriotic and hang up on you immediately. No, we wouldn't do that.
But compared to the rest of the world, yeah. I mean, we're just a much better entrepreneurial society that starts businesses up and does different things. And
but you realize who was saying that? Who wrote that?
What's that?
The guy who wrote that is a guy who the typical member of the Tea Party and typical conservative thinks has got horns growing out of his head and scales on his skin. Larry Summers.
Well, that's fine. I mean, Larry's, whatever his opinion is. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, I just know this. Like Glenn Beck, is when you start living in fear of things and you don't do anything. I mean, you can't allow Obama or Congress for you not to start a business. You got to do
right.
it and move
yeah.
forward and go.
Actually, they don't have much to do with it.
Well,
and when are you running for office, Chris? Because
no.
Sounds like you got my vote.
Yeah, okay. You
well,
can.
My point is to allow a bunch of boneheads in Congress to sit there and dictate your life as to what you're going to do is stupidity. They're idiots, okay? They're a bunch of idiots in Congress to pass laws, say one thing, say another thing. And look, Barack Obama's the same way as any other politician, and our wonderful Mr. Carter's the same way, right? I mean, passes, complains about the stimulus, but yet goes into, and
And when the stimulus money comes here, he comes and brags about it.
Right. Whatever. I mean, I don't care. I mean, I'm moving forward. I'm going to do what my main part is to be out of debt. I don't have to worry about idiots like that. But
you're just like the rest of America.
Right. I mean, so my point is, though, I do have a good friend that owns a business in Georgetown. It's one of the biggest, largest businesses in Georgetown. It's an equipment company.
Uh-huh.
And his insurance for his employees is going up 34%. They just did an audit of the company. It's going up 34%.
What kind of insurance? Health insurance?
Yep.
Health insurance for his employees.
Okay.
Yep.
Before all that, the company has been in the family for a while. They basically had universal health care for all their employees.
Yep.
They covered everything.
Right.
And now he's getting to the point where he can't simply cover the insurance for any of his employees anymore. It's just too expensive.
Well, so, we're just recently going through the same thing at our office. Massive jump, but we are shopping around, and we're amazed at some of the deals that were being offered for very good plans. So I would recommend that he shop around that kind of a jump.
He probably needs to do some shopping.
Maybe he does. I'm just saying, so healthcare, I mean, I think is going to go up for a lot of companies, and they're simply not going to be able to afford to have to pay for stuff unless you have the ability to go across state lines and get healthcare for your employees, for an individual.
No,
whatever,
you said go across state lines, like it's cheaper somewhere else outside of Texas?
Yeah, I'm just saying, so the ability for other states and people from the other states to shop mm-hmm. around and say, I want health care here, I want insurance here.
You actually hit the nail on the head there, and I know I can get in a lot of trouble here, but I'm going to tell you why his health care went up 36%. Would you like to hear it?
Sure.
The state of Texas has declined $100 billion in federal money to pay for people who don't have health insurance. And as a result, that money that the governor of Texas said he won't accept from the federal government on a matter of principle, because the federal government would then control some things in the state of Texas, that money then is going to be spent anyway. It's going to be spent by the hospitals on people who come into the emergency room. They're going to have to raise their internal costs to cover that, and they're going to be hitting insurance health insurance companies issuing insurance in the state of Texas to cover the $100 billion that the governor of Texas is refusing on political reasons.
I disagree with Rick Perry on a lot of things. I respect his sticking to his guns, literally in some cases. But let me make this a little bit more clear about this particular thing. The taxes that paid for Obamacare are being paid by the people of Texas. If you are making more than a certain amount of money and you
$250,000
capital gains, it's even less than that if on capital gains. In other areas, if you make more than $250,000, there's a whole series of little taxes that came in. We're paying the taxes, and we're not taking the money from the government for those taxes. To me, when we send people to Washington and we tell them, you know, this is something that bugs me. It's bugged me for years. We pay more in taxes on our gasoline tax than we receive from the government, the federal government, for our highways. We who have more highways than the rest of the country, any single state, than lots of other states put together in some cases, we're receiving less back from the government than we're paying. I don't like that. Most of our government representatives don't like that. Well, we're choosing that for our health care. It's not like we can reverse Obamacare by saying we don't want the money. I already paid taxes that went to Obamacare. There's another section of taxes for people that don't even realize that they're paying taxes, which is last year, if you had medical expenses, you could deduct anything more than 10% of your your gross adjusted income. You could deduct
adjusted gross income.
Adjusted gross, no, not
AGI,
not, just AGI, not
GDP, not AGI. GI.
Yeah,
go
right.
Ahead, yeah.
Anyway, you could deduct more than 10% of your adjusted gross income. More than 7.5%.
Right.
This year, it's 10%,
right,
which means 3.5%.
And there's also a limit on how much you can put into a healthcare savings
flex
account.
Savings and a healthcare savings account. Yes, there's a cap on those now. And what that means is that for me, for instance, I just had my taxes go up 3%.
On healthcare.
And the governor is not allowing that money to come back to Texas to bring the costs down to cover people that would be covered. That's a problem. I may not fully agree with Obamacare. There's big chunks of it that I have problems with. There's big chunks of it that I think are brilliant.
Well,
We stick to our guns and say, I know we just paid you this money, but don't give it back, I have a problem with that.
And that is why, you hit something right on the head, by the way, when you said cross state lines. Texas law forbids you to cross state lines and get your health insurance somewhere else. And Texas is the one that, as a matter of political principle, the governor has refused the money. The money's going to be spent.
He said that the reason why he's refusing it is that in 5 years we have no guarantee from the federal government that they will continue to send us the money.
And then you still have to pay for it, though. That's my
right.
Thing.
That's true. However, we have taxes coming from us regardless of if in 5 years we take it or don't.
Okay, so if he's looking down the road in 10 years or 15 and 20 years saying this is a monstrosity that's going to come down the road that's going to come back to bite us because...
But he doesn't know that.
Okay, but he's looking at it saying, he's probably looking at the federal government saying what the federal government has done in the past is saying, here, we're going to build this wonderful infrastructure for you. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, these things are wonderful institutions that we've built, and we want you to take part in these things. But if you look into what they start off as into what they are now, there's job bureaucracy.
Totally agree.
But the point is, they're there whether or not he takes the money this year.
This is a great example. And
expense will still be there in 5 years.
Let me come in here with this example. We're going to go back to the gas tax. If the governor of Texas refused the gas tax money, the transportation money that the federal government wanted to give us.
How about the stimulus money?
Right, or the stimulus money. He could have done that.
That's what's building I-35 up through Salado now.
He could have refused it because the federal government can give the Texas Department of Transportation, and does give every year, a chunk of money that comes from our gas tax. But there is no guarantee that that's going to continue next year or the year after or the year after. He could say, I don't want that money because you're going to leave us holding the bucket later.
And have lots of highways.
Except that it leaves us holding the bucket now. We don't have that money now, and we have the requirements from Obamacare that we have to meet. So well, it's a nice principle, and I respect him for standing up to it, but I think it's really not very far-sighted. He's looking at politics rather than looking at expenses. We have that $180 billion of expenses that are being added to our state. It's happening. It's not like it's happening in 5 years and we're holding the bucket then. We're holding it now. The government says we have to do something, and we're not doing it.
And the government is offering to pay for it. We're going to do it whether or not the state of Texas accepts the money. The people in Texas, the employers, are going to pay the bill.
And that's a tough thing. It's two steps down the road to think. It looks like a really principled stand to say the government changes its mind, the federal government changes its mind, it might not give us this money later, we're not going to accept this. And the Supreme Court's the one that ruled and said that we didn't have to accept it. But at the same ruling, it said that we had to take the taxes. We had to pay the taxes even if we didn't accept the money back. So it seems backwards to me to say, I realize you can tax us, but don't give us any money. I'm a little bit lost there. I know the reasoning. I know what he said. And when it comes to things like other parts of Medicare and Medicaid, when the government has said, here, we've got some money, but you're going to have to accept these increases in Medicaid.
Yeah. The government, by the way, the state of Texas could refuse the Medicaid funding.
All of it.
But they don't. And the issue is that because it's, quote, Obamacare, by the way, the Medicaid was passed by a conservative from Texas.
I'm disagreeing with you on the fact that it's Obama that's doing all these things. It's not Obama at all. I mean, it's just the fact that the federal government becomes more and more intrusive in our lives every day. Okay, and now that I, because basically there is no point in time that when I wake up from when I wake up and I go to bed that my life is not regulated by the federal government. From when I step on my carpet, I sleep on my bed, I step on my carpet, to I use the bathroom in the morning, to everything, brushing my teeth is regulated by the federal government.
You're right.
Everything. So it's correct. Everything. So the fact that I understand your point, well, it's tax money and we need to take it. I totally understand those things. I totally understand. But there has to be a point in time where the federal government doesn't need to be involved in our lives in every aspect. It just gets a little ridiculous.
It can be the very easy way to get the government not involved in your life. Leave the country.
Well, that's
true.
I'm not saying conspiracy.
I think that's an extreme.
You
should run for office. That's one of the other alternatives. Run for office get elected and then go and say, look, we need to draw a line.
Carter said that when he ran for
that's
office.
That's true.
And
but Ron Paul said that he was going to stick to his guns. He wasn't going to. I disagree again with Ron Paul in a lot of areas. I agree with him in a lot of areas, but he stuck to it. Where most politicians, when they get to Washington, don't.
Right. Look, my example is: my wife went back to work as a nurse. She's an OR nurse, and the amount of paperwork that they have to deal with because of Obamacare, and I don't care if a care, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Horrendous.
Obamacare, Affordable Care Act,
it's all
Obamacare.
It's horrendous. The amount of paperwork that we go into public school system that our children have to deal with, that the teachers have to deal with because of the federal government is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
You're right, but
totally agree.
The amount of bureaucracy that you're telling me, that saying, listen, these are wonderful taxes. They're going to help people out.
I don't like the paperwork any more than you do.
And I don't like the taxes.
But I'm saying that's the point. To say that we need to take this money because of this, but then all this burdensome bureaucracy, paperwork, everything else that comes with it.
Well, the paperwork came anyway.
No, we got the paperwork.
We got that
whether
already.
We accept the money or not.
That's the point that we're trying to make.
That's my point, though, is that all these things that are supposed to help people out become a giant burden on you, no matter what. No matter what. The amount of paperwork that you have to deal with on a basis to get hired, to get fired. For your schools, everything else has to do with rules and regulations that are just absolutely ridiculous.
Let me tell you something about those rules and regulations. If you actually dig into where they come from, you may be really surprised that the majority of them, at least in my case, in our building and the way we build our building and the way we hire people and everything else, are not from the federal government. They're from the state of Texas.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with you, but I mean, yeah. I'm just saying the amount of bureaucracy that we have to deal with on a regular basis because of government, whatever it is, government in general, is ridiculous. Now, I'm not saying we shouldn't have government that builds me a nice, safe house. I like that. I like safe roads. I think the roads are better. Our cars are better.
Mm-hmm.
Our quality of life is better. There's no two ways about it. But at some point in time, you got to ask yourself, I mean, what point in time is quality of life and bureaucracy, what are they?
Yeah, and that is
where's the breaking point? What's the breaking point of saying my quality of life is really good compared to when I grew up, compared to when you grew up? Like the quality of life is much better, right?
Right, I mean, it is today much better.
Where do you draw the line to say?
I don't know, but I do know we have to play commercials, and we've heard you, Chris. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. It was a great call. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And we do have to play some commercials here because we are not a government-supported station. And we're going to play commercials that have absolutely nothing to do with the personal wealth coach, but probably have a lot to do with Town Square Media. And we'll be back on the other side with more of the personal wealth coach. And we're back with more of the personal wealth coach with Jeff and
Jake.
McClure. You know, if I stay here long enough, I will eventually learn how to work
all
these
knobs and
switches
dials
and everything. Yeah. Actually, I'm okay with the knobs and dials and switches on this board because it is virtually identical to the board that I learned on in 1966. I mean, it could be the same board, except, you know, I'd almost be willing to bet that if I went back to KBEL Radio in Idabel, Oklahoma, where I first started in radio, they'd have a more modern board.
They probably would, yes.
Than the one they have here at KTEM. But such is life, you know, such is life. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. Telephone number is in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
I had something I wanted to talk about.
Uh-oh.
Hedge funds.
Oh, no.
Sounds good.
Let's talk about hedge funds.
Hedge funds have this image of producing amazingly high returns. Now we're beginning to understand, and apparently a lot of academics have looked at the hedge fund issue, and they're beginning to understand it a little better. But in the half decade ending in 2007. The amount of money in hedge funds went from $626 billion to $1.7 trillion. Now we have about $2.25 trillion in hedge funds. So people obviously think hedge funds do really, really well. However, there's an awful lot of people who suspect that the way they did well was by cheating, which is why quite a few of the hedge fund managers, one at a time, are winding up in prison. By the way, what Madoff was running was a hedge fund. So, now, here's the interesting thing. Research Affiliates did a study on how a hedge fund would have affected a portfolio. Once you eliminate, by the way, first you have to eliminate the people who the hedge funds that we know were being run illegally and wound up with people in prison. And, by the way, when that happens, and they don't talk about it too much, as there's a clawback for the people who invested in the fund and took their profits, they get to give the money back. And sometimes they get to give the money back more money than they took out. Anyway, so what they did in Research Affiliates is they took a 60-40 portfolio, a generic portfolio of 60-40 stocks, bonds. They changed that to include a 33% exposure to hedge funds. And there's a couple of very interesting things there. The five-year return ending at the end of last year, the average return falls from 3.8% to 2% when they add the hedge funds in. Two things very important to note in here. Number one, a generic portfolio, a 60-40 portfolio, over the last 5 years had a 3.8% average annual rate of return. And in light of that, I want we've had some interesting people say, why haven't we had a better return? We've actually had, in most cases, a better return than that. But they still are complaining until, but if you look at the fact that there's independence here that says, hey, if you've been doing the standard drill with stocks and bonds, your return would not have been all that hot. Now, but this is interesting. Throw in a 33% exposure to hedge funds, and your return drops to 2%. Two pieces of wisdom here. We've had a low return in the markets over the last decade and certainly over the last 5 years. Number two, if you had a significant exposure to hedge funds in their brilliant, wonderful money-making capacity, your return would have been worse. Don't you love it? Two pieces of wisdom. I love it that when somebody agrees with me, obviously they're quite brilliant. There's a whole, it's in Barron's today if you're interested in looking at it. The name of it is, the column is Focus on Funds, and the headline on under Focus on Funds, Hedge Funds Offer False Hope of Efficiency.
Yeah.
And
that's a pretty good headline.
I get really tired of reading about managers who do ever so much better, and then the media covers their activities when they do really, really well, like the Yale and Harvard endowments. We've talked about that, about
but
how
they don't come
they
back
are.
And talk about what happened in the downturn or what they're doing right now and how they're having to sell their art collection to make up the difference.
You know, yeah, and lay off people because of their fund did so well. But they cover it, but it's buried someplace, and they don't make a big deal out of it because something else comes to the headlines. But anytime that you hear about somebody getting an outsized return, something that's better than it should be or something, they're probably about to lose their shirt. And believe me, there's the very serious money managers from Warren Buffett all the way around who have done very, very well over a long term are warning investors, do not reach for higher yield. Despite that, the money is flowing vigorously
to high
into
yield
anything
funds.
That promises a high yield, anything that promises a higher interest rate, anything that promises stability with phenomenal income. Anytime that you run across that, folks, I'm going to tell you, you are set up to lose a lot of money and possibly everything. Well, we're about out of time, so we probably ought to tell you that you're listening to the Personal Wealth Coach because we're out of time. Obviously,
yeah,
that's a good time to tell them.
Good time to tell them.
The Personal Wealth Coach is a wealth management firm. We are fee-only investment advisors and managers, and we manage portfolios for people who have enough money that they really don't want to lose it, and they'd like to live off of it for the rest of their life, and for foundations and pension funds and things like that. And if you would like to contact us, obviously during the week you can call and get a live human being to answer the phone, or you can call today or tomorrow and leave a voicemail message. 947-1111 is our local telephone number.
You can also reach us toll-free at 1-800-914-PLAN. That's 1-800-914-7526.
Can they reach us any other way?
Oh, well, I'm glad you asked.
Well,
yes,
you can send an email to jeff@tpwc.com or...
or jake@tpwc.com.
You can actually send one to both of us if you'd like.
Yes, but you have to send it to each address.
Separately.
Or together.
Well, together, yeah. You could put them both in the address line.
Yes.
Or you could go to our website, which is...
ThePersonalWealthCoach.com. We have podcasts and basically...
Have we got that thing out of... under construction yet?
It is still under construction. We've changed some things. We're about to make some bigger changes. Waiting on some regulatory changes. We've gone through the regulatory changes, and we're going to be
making
some really nice things.
It'll be over construction.
It'll be over construction rather than under construction. Because when the construction's over, you know, when roads are under construction, then they get over. And well, until next week, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
And we look forward to you hearing us again.
TM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood. Proud to broadcast to the largest military post in the free world. News Radio 1400 KTEM.